ואמר, סולו סולו פנו דרך, הרימו מכשול מדרך עמי. According to Rashi, the Navi is speaking to Am Yisrael and telling them to clear the way. Ibn Ezra says, we don't know who the speaker is, but perhaps he's actually speaking to the Bnei Nechar, to those converts and the eunuchs that we read about in the very first Haftarah that we studied, because this is the continuation of that chapter. And Malbin takes a completely different approach. He says, this is said by Hashem, and it is said to the leaders, to the teachers, to the parents. Solu, solu, panu derech. Clear the way. Herimu michshol miderech ami. Lift up any kind of stumbling blocks from the road upon which my people are walking. And when Hashem calls us ami, my people, there is a clear sense of affection. You're mine, no matter what. If you need to solu, which means pave a road, it means there is no road at all. And that's for those who know nothing. Those Jews that are so far removed that they have no concept about what it is that they are, if you like, rebelling. They don't even know to what they're supposed to return because they've been so far gone. And as far as he's concerned, those are seen as, if you like, the lost sheep, who we can hardly hold responsible. They have no sense at all about a Masorah. They don't know what it is that they are missing. Solu derech. Panu derech, clear the road. Now it means that there actually is a road. You had somebody who went to Hebrew school and he was bar mitzvah. He learned something, but most of it has been forgotten. And what we now need to do is we have a road, but we have a lot of things that fall on the road. There are leaves and branches of the trees that have fallen there. We need to remove that. Harimu michshol. Now let's presume that we have a cleared road. And let's presume that it has been well paved. So we have somebody who didn't go just to Hebrew school, but went to day school and grew up in a home of Shomrei Torah and mitzvahs. And he knows the way. But there's a stumbling block, some kind of a taiva, some kind of an addiction, some kind of problem that has created a barrier that can't let him move on in the road. Harimu michshol. For so said Ram v'nisa shochen ad v'kadosh shemo. Now you know that because we begin Shachris on Shabbat and every Yontif with that line. For God is the one on high and he is transcendent. Shochen ad, he dwells in eternity. And his name is, when we say Kadosh, it means it is removed from our world, set aside. And this transcendent God, at the same time, declares, Ve'et daka ushfal ruach. I am with the one who is depressed and oppressed, and the lowly of spirit. God dwells with those who are broken physically, who are broken emotionally, those who've seen themselves as unable to heal themselves. For the same transcendent God is also immanent and is not to be found among the arrogant, among the egocentric and the proud, but rather among those that are lowly, those that recognize their flaws and their weaknesses. Lahachyot, and I come down from where I am to be among them. Lahachyot ruach shfalim, ulahachyot lev nitkaim. I am here to revive, to make them live again. And if you notice carefully, originally he said, daka ushfal ruach. And yet he goes and revives the shafel first, and later the nitka. For the shafel didn't need somebody or some tzuris to bring him down, but his own self-recognition, his own self-evaluation, made him recognize how low he's come. And so therefore the Ribbono Shel Olam revives him on his own. But the Nitka is a passive voice. It's somebody who has been oppressed or depressed, either by illness or by tzuris or by oppressors on the outside. The Ribbono Shel Olam goes to them only later because they didn't do it out of some conscious self-recognition and self-examination, but rather because of outside forces, they were brought down to their knees. And then he finally does revive them as well. And what does he then declare? And this is, if you like, a chidush, something completely new that we have not seen in other places about tshuva, except, if you like, at the very end of Dvarim. Ki lo le'olam ariv, for I won't quarrel with you. I won't fight with you forever, says Hashem. Ve'lo la'netzach ektzof, and I won't until eternity rage and be furious with you. Ki ruchi milfanai ya'atof unshamot ani asiti. The second phrase is rather simple. Neshamot ani asiti, the souls, I made them. And so they're mine. And therefore, because they're mine, I care about them. And that's why I won't be angry forever. Bore nefashot rabot vechesronan. The Ribbono Shel Olam created many souls and their flaws and their defects. And the Ribbono Shel Olam has a lot of respect for the creatures that he made and believes in their ability to, if you like, rise up above themselves and control their Yetzer. Because along with the Yetzer Hara, he also gave them a Yetzer Tov. And remember that you have a Neshama that is Chelek Elokam Mimal. So in this theology is the notion, HaNeshamot, the souls that the Ribbono Shel Olam breathed into us, also have an intuitive sense of right and wrong. So it is imprinted in us. We have an issue, what is Ruach Milfanai Ya'atov? Now, according to some, the Ruach is not different from the Nefesh, and that there's a difference between a nefesh and a neshama. A nefesh is the living spirit that is equally found in any beast, in any animal. It's the anima. Whereas the soul is consciousness and self-consciousness and the ability to reason as well as empathize. I know we think that animals can empathize as well. I won't go into argue all that. I'll leave that to Peter. I think that we human beings like to project their own things upon their pets and presume that their pets do more than self-interest. Rashi reads the first half as follows. Ki ruach ya'atof milfanai. He simply does sarsehu uparshehu. He says, the spirit will swoon before me. Swooning means that in the great sense of awesomeness of God, or in the great tzuris that come upon a person, we finally are brought down to our knees. And as a result, God will no longer be angry with us once we are submitting. And finally, he declares, Uneshamot ani asiti. And as a result, once I break you, the goodness inside you, the capability, the potential that's in you that I made will come out, and therefore there's no need for me to be angry anymore. Radak takes a different approach, and he says, the spirit of a human being, he says, is essentially good, and it is God's spirit that he breathed into him. And it will ultimately, since it comes from God, take over the body. It will allow it to overcome the Yetzer Hara, which is primarily linked in physical desires. Since I made them, I ultimately love them, though I need to sometimes admonish them. But the question is, to what degree? If that's the case, if the Ribbono Shel Olam declares that we're fundamentally good, what was the point of all the suffering? And that's what the next verse comes and tells us here. Ba'avon bitzo katzafti ve'akehu. When he went and executed his sins, his own desires, I became angry and furious and I beat him. Didn't do much good. So haster ve'aktof. So I hid myself from him. I won't punish him. Let him do what he wants and let's see how he falls on his own. I'll hide my face, as the Rebbe Shlom said that he would ultimately do. Meaning, I'll leave you to chance to whatever happens in the law of nature. I will remove my protection from you. And I will remain angry. Inside, I'm angry, waiting for you to see what you will do. And what happened in both cases? Vayelech shovav bederech libo. And he went wildly, following his own impulses. In other words, when I beat him, I managed to control him for a little bit. As soon as the beating was over, we're right back to where we started from. When I hid my face from him and said, we won't do this as a case of reward and punishment. Let him do something called self-actualization, self-fulfillment. I found that again he did exactly what he wanted to do and allowed himself to go directly into a brick wall. It seems then that the Rabbanei Shalom has given up on the possibility of disciplining us, of punishing us, because punishment seems to have produced very little, says Radak. And therefore, as a last resort, says Radak, Al ken Hashem shav elamo. Therefore, God returns to his people. I've hidden my face too long. Drachav ra'iti. I saw his ways. I came to understand what they are. When I say, aha, I see meaning I understand his ways. I understand what it is that's motivating him. Va'arpa'ehu, he needs a healing. He's sick. It would be very much like saying, if I have an addict, beating him does me no good. Ignoring him does no good. I need to heal him. Ve'anchehu, and I will lead him and guide him. Ve'eshalem nichumim lo, I will give him comfort. I'm going to love him. Ule'avelav, and to those that mourn him. In other words, not just the sinner, but the parents, those that love him, those that are mourning and seeing how he's self-destructing. If I take it as a national thing, then he's speaking to Am Yisrael, Ami. And it turns out that all of the sufferings, everything we've been through, has done no good. So the Rebbeinu Shlom decides that we have to do a little bit of loving, and a little bit of healing, and a little bit of comforting, and perhaps that will rehabilitate him. And now he declares, as a result, Bore Niv Sfataim, the creator who created all reality by simply declaring. Remember, Vayomer Elokim Yehi Or. God had to simply will it, say it. This time, what will he declare? No more war, no more suffering, no more disease. Shalom. Shalom lerachok velekarov. Amar Hashem urfativ. Peace. Peace to the one from far. Peace to the one from near. So declares God, and I will heal him. His people he is going to heal. Now the question is, who is the one from far? Who's the one from near? According to some, the Rachok are those in Golos. The Karov are those in Eretz Yisrael and in Yerushalayim. Because he's, according to Radak, speaking to Am Yisrael in Golos, after the destruction, where the destruction of Beit HaMikdash and our dispersion has done nothing to make us come back to the Rebbeinu Shlom. So the Rebbeinu Shlom will bring us back. And he will declare peace and ultimately heal us, bringing us back even before we did tshuva. According to others, Lerachok veLekarov is that Hashem will give peace first to the Baal Tshuva, the one that was so far away and nevertheless searched for something spiritual. Peace to the one who's come back. And he was the one who was not given a chinuch, was not educated to be frum, was not taught Torah. He'll come back first. Velakarov is the one that grew up in a frum home, but keeps stumbling. I'll bring him back too, but only secondary. For b'makom shebaalei tshuva omdim, ein tzadikim gmurim tshuvim. Why? Because the baal tshuva did not have the chinuch. The baal tshuva was withstanding all kinds of temptations and managed to overcome that. For that person who searches for God, I bring him back and I give him peace. But not everybody, because there is still accountability. V'harishaim kiyam nigash. But a roshe will be like a stormy sea, a sea that rushes in with its waves. Who are these rishoim? Says Radak, these are the people who remain rebellious and deny that there is a God. These are the arrogant, egocentric narcissists who just won't budge, refusing to be broken either by tzores or by the futility of their own behavior or by any kind of contemplation, because they refuse to contemplate. They believe that late din ve'late dayan, there is no law and there is no judge. Ish hayashar be'enav yaseh. What are they like? They are like the stormy sea. The sea keeps trying to swallow the land, because what is the primordial state of the universe?
Water.
Exactly. Everything was covered by water.
Water.
Ve'ha'aretz hayta tohu vavohu ve'choshech al pnei tehom. So, Rishoyim, see what happens when people behave like they do. What do they do? The wave that goes before me, what did happen to him? Did he manage to swallow the earth?
No.
No. Eventually, he retreats, right? It gets broken against the rocks or against the breakers. And so what happens? You'd think that the wave after him would say, hello, no point rushing against the rocks. I'm going to break too. Rishoyim refused to learn from history. They see what happens. They see what occurs when you simply follow your impulses uncontrollably. When you let your rage, when you go and let both your libido as well as your thanatos, your violence, simply rage. What happens? You self-destruct. You would presume that one would learn from the other, don't you think? Think about all of those gangs on the west side of Chicago. You'd think that somebody would learn. Instead, what do they do? Keep running, right? Keep doing the same thing over and over again.
Over again.
Exactly. Late din ve'late dayan. And in the process, what do? To the earth? They erode the earth and they eat it away and they bring out all the schmutz from the sea on top of the earth and from the earth on back into the sea, leaving in their wake destruction and death. That's why he compares them. What happens to them, says the Navi? V'harishaim kiyam nigrash. The Rishoyim are like a rushing sea. Ki hashket lo yuchal, for he refuses. He can't simply quiet down. He won't. V'yigreshu me'mav, and his waters chase away and plow away. Refesh. Refesh means filth. V'tit. And clay, eroding the earth, spilling out the sea on top of the earth. Now, what happens when all that salt water hits the ground? What happens to plant life? It dies. Ein shalom amar Elokai l'Rishayim. There is no peace, said my God to the Rishayim. If you took Yudalet through Kaf Aleph, who's speaking? Hashem or the Navi? He refers to God in third person. He sometimes quotes God. And when he quotes God, he says, Amar Hashem. God said, right? Right. And at the end he says, Amar Elokai, said my God. And therefore, we would take the position that it is the Navi speaking. To whom is he speaking that we should pave the road? Only to the leaders? He's speaking to every one of us. We are responsible for one another. And it is our job, not somebody else's job, not my rabbi's job, not my president's job, not somebody else's job. It's my job, whoever I am, to prepare the way back, to help my people come back. Each one of us has to do that. And the Haftarah continues. Kra begaron, al tachsoch. Now God is speaking to the Navi. Call out with your throat. Al tachsoch, don't hold back. Keshofar harem kolecha. Lift up your voice like a shofar. Vehaged le'ami pisham. And tell my people what their sin is. Ulebet Yaakov chatotam. And tell Bet Yaakov, the house of Yaakov, what is their sin. When Hashem uses the word ami in the Torah, it always is a sign of affection. When he calls him am, ha'am, the people, or amcha, your people, it's not the same.
What is the difference between a pesha and a chet?
A pesha is somebody who knows what he's doing and he's doing it anyway. And a chet is a boo-boo. Either I didn't know it was wrong, or I didn't mean to do it, because we know that we are prone to accidents. Think of it as arrows. If I aim at you and I shoot you and kill you, that's a pesha. But if I'm aiming at the target and I'm such a bad shot that my arrow went awry, either because the wind was blowing and I didn't account for it, or because my arrow was crooked and it took a detour, or because my hands are weak, and instead it killed somebody instead of hitting the target, and I did never intend it. That's a chet. And therefore, Rashi tells us that Ami are the Talmidei Chachomim. Ami are my people. You guys know better, and nevertheless, you're doing a pesha. And he doesn't say just my Jews. He says Talmidei Chachamim. And what about a Talmid Chacham? A Talmid Chacham, even if he does a shgaga, it's considered a pesha and an avon. When a Talmid Chacham, who's supposed to know better, who should know to be cautious, who should know his weaknesses, does a boo-boo, it's considered a horrible sin. Beit Yaakov is the Amoritz, says Rashi. That's the common people, the ignorant people. And those ignorant people, even if they did it on purpose, but because they're ignorant, because they haven't been educated, their zadon, their things even that they did on purpose, will be treated as an accidental sin if they regret it. But now comes one of the most sarcastic lines that we've ever read in the entire Tanakh. And it's kind of hard sometimes to understand, but Rashi and everybody agrees that this is utter sarcasm. Ve'oti yom yom yidreshun, ve'dat rachayich petzun, and they seek me day in and day out. Who is that? The Ami, says Rashi. You know, these Talmidei Chacham, they sit and learn, and they're studying, and they're theologians, and they're asking for God, where is God now, and what's happening here? Ve'dat rachayich potzun, and they desire to know my ways. I'm trying to understand God. I am philosophizing. Kigoi, as if they were a people, asher tzedakasa, u'mishpat Elohav lo azav. As if they were a people that did charitable works, good works, and had never left God's law. In other words, when you're perfect, you can ask about why is the Rabbanu Shlom doing this to me. When you've seen that you've done everything that you should do, you can say, where is God now? Why is God letting this happen? But it's very nice to say, why is God letting happen, when I'm going to ask you, why are you letting it happen? Yishaluni mishpatei tzedek. They demand of me a just law. They want justice from the Rabbanu Shlom. Kirvat Elohim yichpotzun. They claim that they want God to be near them. Really? You want God on your shoulder every day? When you're doing what you're doing? You want him watching you? Really? And what do they say? Lama tsamnu velo raita? Why did we fast and you didn't even pay attention, God? We were get to kinderlach, we stood in shul all day on Yom Kippur. Ininu nafshenu. We tormented our souls, we oppressed our souls, we afflicted our bodies. Velotida, don't you know it? You see, it's for no good. I was a good Jew, I ate kosher, I did everything I was supposed to do. I'm such a tzaddik, how could you do this to me, God? Really? The reason you fast is because you want to make a deal with me. It's because you want something. It's not out of recognition of what you've done or what you can be. It's because you're trying to make a deal. You know, God, I have a great deal coming. I'm going to go give some tzedakah and make sure that this one works out. Ka-ching, ka-ching, ka-ching. V'chol atzaveichem tingoshu. And now comes a very strange word. While you're there in shul fasting, what are you doing? Atzaveichem. All those that you made sad, you continue to beat on them and abuse them. Noges is what they do to a slave as they beat him and whip him. Or you whip like this on all your sorrows. It's about you and your egocentrism. Hen l'riv u'matzah tatzumu. You know how many good Jews fast on Yom Kippur? They do God a favor. Some of them even do 25 hours. And they think that they did a Rabban Shalom HaToyve. Hen lariv u'matzah tatzumu. While you're fasting, you go and quarrel and fight with a guy who took your seat in shul, with your neighbor, with your mother-in-law. U'lehakot be'egrof rosh resha. And while you beat your chest, you beat it with a cruel fist. The same fist that hits other people. La tatsumu kayom. I don't need you to fast the way you're doing it today. La hashmiya b'marom kolchem. And don't raise up your voice on high. I don't need that, God said. Hakazei yetzom afchareu. You think this is the kind of fast that I would choose? Yom anot adam nafsho. This is the kind of day I want where I commanded you to afflict your body and your soul. That's what I asked for. Halechof ke'agmon rasho. I need you to bend your head over, you know, that like a reed. And Rashi says an agmon is like a fisherman's hook. V'sak va'efir yetzia. And you would put on sackcloth and ashes on yourself. Of course, we don't do that on Yom Kippur. We do that on Tisha B'Av. I need that from you. Halazetik ratzom. Ve'yom ratzon laHashem, and this is the day that Hashem wanted. It's dripping with sarcasm. Do you know why we read this on Yom Kippur? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times the word tzom. 3 times inui nefesh, afflicting your souls, which is what the Torah told you to do on Yom Kippur. That's not what I asked for, God said. You want what on Yom Kippur? Slicha, forgiveness, you got it. You had 10 days, you said slichas. You started saying slichas, though if you're Ashkenazi, you started saying slichas Motzei Shabbos. If you're a Sfaradi, you started saying Rosh Chodesh Elul. You've got slichas. You want me to forgive you? I forgave you. What is it you really want is kapara. And there's a big difference. There's a difference between tshuva, which is always accepted, and kapara. A kapara means that God has to override din. And what is the din? That there is always consequences to your behavior. To be disconnected from the consequences of your behavior requires kapara. A kapara means God would put a barrier, a kaporet, between you and the behavior that you had and the consequences thereof. You don't get kapara unless you do the following. Haloze tzom afcharehu. This is the fast that I would choose. Pateach chartzubot resha. Open up the stocks. Do you remember what the Puritans used to put people in stocks when they were punished? Those are the things that tie people up. Hater agudot muta. Undo. Untie. the ropes that hold the yoke of the animal to the wagon or to the plow that he's pulling. Veshalach retzutzim chofshim, and send those broken people free. Vechol mota tenateku, and any yoke, break it and disconnect it. Remove yokes that you've put on other people. According to a scholar in the late 1800s, Zaks, this particular haftarah, or rather this particular chapter of Yeshayahu, was read on Yom Kippur, or for Yom Kippur, in a year of Yovel. You know that every 7 years is Shemitah, and every 50th year, 49, so we have now 2 years in a row, we have Yovel. In Yovel, according to the law of the Torah, property goes back to its original owners. So if you sold some real estate in Eretz Yisrael had been divided among the 12 tribes, the property would go back to its original owners. So every 50 years, there's a redistribution of real estate. So at best, you get a lease, and the lease can be no more than 49 years. In addition, debts that can break people are annulled. Now that's a hard one, isn't it? Because people would normally not give a loan if it was approaching the year of Yovel, and they would be terribly loath to give up their property. What occurred was, in ancient times, is that people had a plot of land. That land provided food for them and their families. But if it was a bad year, if there was locust, if there was drought, they would lose the family farm, and they would give it over to big agribusiness. There's no more, right? Only the big ones own it. And soon it was owned only by the very rich that owned large land, and they allowed the landless people to remain on the land as peasants that were essentially their serfs. Yovel came around every so often to correct that mistake, liberate, give people back their plots of land, and take away the monopolizing power of those that could ride out those bad years of drought or plague or something else which forced others into the poorhouse. Now, you also know that there was a system of slavery in which when people stole, they had to pay back double, and if they didn't have the money to pay back, they were sold into slavery so that their wages that they would have worked went back to pay the money that they had stolen. And the fine, because if you stole 100, you had to pay back 200. So many of the thieves, if you like, became slaves, but they could only be slaves for 6 years maximum. And the owners were sometimes loath to let them go. So you remember what used to happen when you used to work in the mines and you had to buy everything from the company store? So your wages were too little and you had only one place to buy your food, so you remained perpetually in debt. And you were essentially an indentured servant in perpetuity. That kind of injustice eventually evolved in Am Yisrael, where they, in fact, created classes of the very rich and then the very poor peasantry who became essentially their slaves. Now, this was not also different after the Industrial Revolution, when you had people working in factory for barely subsistence wages, and you had those that became extremely wealthy, and the class below, the working class, the blue collars, who could barely scrape by a living. And this is what he's talking about. Send the retzutzim, those broken people, send them free and break every yoke. Instead, what must you do? Halo paros la'ra'ev lachmecha. Slice a piece of your bread for the one that's hungry. Ve'aniyim merudim tavi bayit. Those desperately poor people that have nowhere to go, that are homeless, bring them home to your home. Bring them into your house. Ki tir'eh arom, should you see somebody naked, v'kisito, cover him up. U'mibsarcha lo titalem, and from your own flesh, don't ignore it. That is often used as an indication, don't be just nice to other people, be nice to your own mishpucha. But on the derech hapshat, they're all your flesh. for all humanity are brothers. And you can't just walk by if you're seeing such things happening. You want kapara? Tzedakah is the way to get kapara. Az yibaka kashachar orecha. Then your light will burst through like the dawn. Says Malbim, the dawn doesn't come all at once, slowly, and it breaks through the clouds, saying that the light that will break through is not merely your good fortune. It is your potential. The light of your neshama, what you can be, can gradually rise up as the sun. Through the clouds and through the fog of this world. Ve'aruchatcha mehera titzmach. And in the same fashion, your medicine, the thing that you need to heal yourself, will also grow quickly. But he tells us both of these are natural events. It's not going to suddenly money coming out of the heavens flying down at you. It will look like a natural progression of success. V'halach lefanecha tzidkecha. And your righteousness will walk before you, lighting the way of this dark world that we live in. V'choshech al pnei tehom. And the darkness that is over the depths here. And kvod Hashem ye'asfecha. And ultimately, the glory of God and the essence of God from which you come will gather you in when you die, and you will join up back to the source from which you came from. If you do what you're supposed to do, as tikra, then you can call out on Yom Kippur, on Rosh Hashanah, the Hashem yaneh, and Hashem will answer. Tishaveya, and you will groan when you're under trouble. Vayomar, and he will say, before you can even cry out, Hineni. Here I am. Hashem will say that to you if you do what you need to do. Im tasir mitochecha mota. But remember, all that is on condition that you remove from you any yoke that you put on somebody else. And what else should you remove? Shlach etzba. The tendency to point a finger and send a finger. Says Rashi, a finger, how much more so the whole hand. But you know the finger? Finger pointing? V'daber aven, and to speak things you shouldn't speak. Three things. Free the people, stop pointing fingers, and stop cursing out others. Instead, v'tafek la'ev nafshecha. Don't just give him your piece of bread. I told you earlier, give him a piece of bread. Yep. Give him also your soul. Comfort him. Talk to him. V'nefesh na'ana tasbia, and an afflicted soul satiated. You know what an afflicted soul is? A depressed person. Somebody who's been abused, who's suffered. Satiate them, not with food. With your humanity. With your empathy. V'zarach b'choshech orecha, so your light will then light up in the darkness, like you turn on the light. Now it will no longer be gradual. No longer will it be natural, but quite miraculous. The lights will come on. Ve'afelatcha katzohoraim. And when there's a thick, dark fog, it will be like the sunshine at noon. V'nachacha Hashem tamid, and Hashem will hold your hand, guiding you, always. V'hisbiya b'tzachtzachot nafshecha. And he will satiate your soul with tzachtzachot. Strange word. Rashi says tzachtzachot is fine food, pleasurable things. Malbim says letzachtzeach is polished. Not a polished apple, but he will make sure that your soul shines like a polished soul. Ve'atzmotecha yachalitz. And your bones, yachalitz. Now some treat that as yachalotz, which means when you're all tzekvetched and now you get to stretch out and feel more comfortable and not tight in a vise. But others tell us, no, that's yachalots, not yachalitz. It means he will strengthen your bones. So there is a promise, both, says Radak, of spiritual as well as physical healing. V'hayita kegan raveh, and you will become like a well-watered garden, giving off its fruit. Uchemotza maim, and like a spring of water. Asher lo yekazvu maimav, whose waters will never ever disappoint. Gan raveh is physical, monetary, financial, familial success. That's your garden, well-watered. And the spring of water is the effect you can have on others. Your own Torah that is like water will never, ever disappoint. You'll give it to others. And as a result, uvanu mimcha chovot olam. From you, the ruins of this world will be built. Mosdei dol vadol tekomem. You will establish the pillars that will withstand from generation to generation, that will hold up the civilization that you so cherish. Vekoralach, and you will be called Goder Peretz. You were the one that closed the fence that had been burst open. Because the fences that held back the waters, the fences that held back the storm, have been broken. All sense of what is right and wrong has been broken down. You need to patch up the corral. Mishovev nitivot lashavet. You are the one that repaved the roads so that they can come back and resettle. Resettle Eretz Yisrael. Resettle civilization. Because our civilization has been ruined. Im tashiv mishabat raglecha. But again, there's another contingency, and one that we heard before. If you will withhold your foot from walking on Shabbos, meaning walking outside of Tchum Shabbos, walking too far on Shabbat, asot cheftzecha biyom kochi, and stop doing what you want, achieving what your gain is, your desires, on my holy day, according to many, according to Chazal and the Gemara, that's a reference to Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is not about asking God for what you need. God, my bank account is low. God, I need kids. God, I need this. Not. Yom Kippur is for you to think about what it is that you can do to make this a better world. Vekarata leShabbat onek, but it's not sufficient to simply withhold and honor the day of Shabbos or Yom Kippur or Yom Tov. You have to make it pleasant. And pleasant is a simple thing b'halacha. Special food, special clothing. You make the house look different on Shabbos and on Yom Tov. Likdosh Hashem mechubad. Honor the holy days of God. Honor them. Honor them. Show that it's different. V'chibadeto me'asot rachecha. And you should honor it from doing your ways. What are your ways? Don't go to shul and talk business. Mimtso cheftzecha v'daber davar. And yet, what are you allowed to talk about in shul and on Shabbos? You're allowed to teach your children. You can make shiduchim, and you can pledge money for tzedakah. That you're allowed to do on Shabbos and on Yom Tov. Az titanag al Hashem. Then you can take pleasure and utter joy on God, in other words, on His account. And the thing is that when the Ribbono Shel Olam gives you good fortune, you're supposed to enjoy it. We're not supposed to walk around grim-faced. Look at this gorgeous world, a gift that was given to you. Revel in it. And I promise you, v'hirkavticha al bamatei aretz, I will ride you on the high stages of this earth. Put you above all other people, give you governance over other nations. Ve'echalticha nachlat Yaakov avicha, and I will feed you the portion that I promised to your father Yaakov, not Avraham, not Yitzchak. Yaakov. Because Avraham was promised, Kol ha'aretz asher ata ro'eh, all the earth that you can see with your eye is yours. And Yaakov was told, Ufaratzta yama vakedma, tzfona vanegba, you shall burst out to the north, to the south, to the east and to the west. In other words, the entire world will be yours. That's Nachlat Yaakov Avicha. Ki pi Hashem diber. For so spoke the mouth of God.